Welcome to the Talk Write Done Writing Podcast for coaches. If like me, you're a coach and entrepreneur, you'll know you either need to hire a writer or become a writer. Whether your work in progress is a blog post, an article, or a book, here you'll find the inspiration, motivation, and expertise you need to help you succeed. I'm your host, writing coach, editor, and applied linguist, Dr. Lizzie Tangi, and I hope that together we can get our best writing done. So welcome back to the show, and I'm really excited to have today's guest on, Claire Louise Owen, aka Claire the Soberholic. Claire supports ambitious women to stop relying on alcohol by following her no-fail five-stage process and allowing women to take control without judgment, shame, or fear. Claire has been featured in Woman, Closer, Good Housekeeping, The Telegraph, The Daily Mail, Platinum Magazine, and appeared on BBC News, ITV, and Radio Newcastle, among others. So what a list there, Claire. I'm really excited to chat to you today. So thank you for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Hello. I've been of everywhere I've been.
I know, it's quite a list there. Okay, if we start, I think if you could just tell listeners about how you became the Soberholic and, you know, how you now empower other women to give up alcohol or to moderate their alcohol intake.
Yeah, well, it's from life experience, I suppose. That's what I'm going to use. 4 years ago, I was a typical binge drinker and I drank because I thought I needed it. It was never an option to quit. I was always trying to cut down. You see, I think I used alcohol as the accessory to my busy life. I used it to celebrate and commiserate. It was just always there and it was causing problems, but I blamed everything but the alcohol for those problems.
And I think, you know, just for a bit of context, I mean, when we met and I heard what you did, I was just so excited because I know I've got a lot of listeners who aren't in the UK, and it's just such a kind of unquestioned backbone of our society, isn't it, really, that this kind of drinking encouraged culture.
Exactly. It's the birthday cards we suggest it to each other. You know, it's almost like you're missing out if you don't. But I was inspired by a friend, and at first we gave up together. But sadly, she's no longer with us. But I'm always grateful to her because she really made me question what I was calling fun. Mm-hmm. So initially, my goal was just to quit for a short while. And that changed absolutely everything for me. The fog lifted. And it enabled me to make the small positive changes that I really needed to make. I closed the business that was bragging me down. I invested my time in my relationship. I volunteered in a recovery clinic because I wanted to understand this. And I could see that none of the services that were out there, although they were voluntary, I wouldn't have gone. It wasn't something that I was prepared to wear as a badge. I would never call myself an alcoholic. I didn't want to take that label, but doing this started a huge journey of transformation and discovery for me for all of my life. It wasn't just that small pocket of my life that I thought it was. It was actually entwined in everything that I did.
Yeah. And would you say that the ladies that you work with, it is all women that you work with, isn't it?
Anyone can buy the book. I think anyone can buy the book. Anyone can watch my YouTube. It's just when I get to the Zoom calls and doing my online coaching in groups, I'm finding that my service is really addressed to a women's issue, you know, like the mummy needs wine culture. It's not daddy.
That, isn't it? Mummy needs wine.
Yeah,
and it's o'clock and all of that kind of thing.
And it's looking at the bottles on the top shelves. They look beautiful. They're like perfume counter. And then you look at the bottom and it's the value stuff. And that, unfortunately, is the, you know, the situation. And it was a case of, for me, getting off that train before a hit crisis. Mm-hmm. So my service is to inspire women, if they have another goal in life and they're struggling to get to that goal, you know, this could be the answer where they might need extra energy, time, focus, money.
Yes. Yeah. And would you say the people that come to you, you know, are they kind of at that stage where they are alcoholics, or is it kind of pre that, where it's just kind of a bit of drink now and again kind of thing?
I think it's for everyone, isn't it? If this is something that people stop and think, oh, well, actually, you know, you hear it in the hairdresser, so I didn't want to have a drink, but I did, or I only wanted one bottle, and we'll laugh about it. But, you know, my friend's no longer with us.
Yeah.
My approach is different because I work really hard to remove the blame. This is just a culture that we found ourselves in. It's actually a modern day issue that it's today. It's happened, you know. If you think back to the 1930s, somebody got their heads together and they created AA for men because that was an issue of the time then. This is me creating something to address the specific issue that I felt I was trapped in, because it was the Ladette culture that at first inspired me to drink. I survived the rave scene, and it's the mummy needs wine culture that nearly took me and I lost my friend, you know? And it's about saying, this isn't as hard as we think it is. It's much easier than we think it is. And it can be the key to like unlocking a huge different future to you, for you and the rest of your family. You know, it wasn't just me who was drinking too much. It was my partner, it was my husband. And now he's nearly 2 years sober. Mm-hmm. I never imagined that that would happen. Yeah. I didn't think I was so, that I could have that influence on him, probably because he's bigger.
I think it's really, one of the people see you doing something, don't they? It's so inspiring, and they can see what else you can do. Yeah. I mean, something that we chatted about when we met was, you know, we were talking about during the pandemic, it became a really big thing, didn't it? Oh, just, you know, just to mark the end of the day. And I was kind of falling into that as well. I've never been like a massive drinker. Well, you know, in my younger days at uni or whatever, I'd go out and have at the weekend. But even during the pandemic, kind of getting to the end of the day and it's like, oh, you know, text my friends, is it too early for a glass of wine? You know, 4 o'clock, how else do you mark the end of the working day? And I think that happened to a lot of people during the pandemic.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of the time we feel like it has to be a problem for us to make a change. Mm. But this, I hope, is breaking that open. And I want people to question why they're drinking. Yeah. And not just why they're drinking, but what would change if they were to stop? Like, why do they want to quit? What is the desire of wanting to quit? For so long, we look for permission to continue to drinking. But, you know, if you think about it, we were worried about our health in COVID. Okay, people were drinking because they were at home and things were just different. It was a bit of a holiday feel about it. But if you think about it, really, it lowers your immune system.
Yeah.
So if that's important to you, that it's, you know, COVID threatened our health. Now it's all about our finances. So on either of those things, and then if you think about your relationships, everything will improve without it. And that doesn't mean because you're sitting on a park bench drinking it. Even if you're relying on it because you feel a bit stressed.
Yeah.
You're wondering why you're overweight.
Isn't it? You know, that's what I find. I mean, I have, you know, for the past, I don't know how long, like year, I think I was drinking more during the pandemic, and then I, you know, yeah, maybe have a glass of wine at the weekend or something. But I just find just having a fresh head in the evening and then the morning, it just makes such a difference to what I can achieve. And I think part of it is kind of focusing on my business now, and I'm doing a lot more kind of running and things like that. But all those kind of things, you just kind of lose the motivation if you're in a constant kind of, you know, you've had a couple of glasses of wine or something, you don't have that motivation, I think.
Exactly. And we think about, well, it's not causing a problem, you know, but it doesn't have to be causing a problem. It's thinking about what it's taken away.
Yeah.
Like you say, that little extra sparkle. And what I'm finding is women are finding it easier than they thought it would. Mm. It's easier than they thought they would.
Yes.
It's almost like this invisible shield that says, I can't do without it. You know, I can't cope without it. But actually, when you break through that, you can. People can, especially if you're like yourself, you know, it's just got a little bit over a certain period of time. And that's when I want to pick women up, is in those transitions. Like you talk about COVID, but that could have been a divorce. It could have been a redundancy. And at those times, people rely more on it. And this is just a way of saying it might not, your life might not be falling apart, but how would it look without it?
Yeah.
Like that was what I got excited about. Oh, each month I got more curious about, if I feel like this now after 2 months, how am I going to feel further down the line? But it wasn't easy. in the things that were hard weren't the things I thought would be hard. It was feeling left out. It was imagining that there was this party that I wasn't invited to. It was, you know, it gets inside of your head.
Yeah.
And that's why my service is there to help women to keep up the momentum of change and to know that there's other people there who are going through it. And you can see with your own eyes how it will look if you keep going with this, because you might not know anyone in your life who's 6 months sober out of choice. Maybe you know someone, you know, that person who had to stop drinking because they're an alcoholic, but we're not comparing ourselves with them. You know, it's just a different way of looking at things, and brilliant, because you had your business, your fitness and something else. But I didn't have anything else like that. I had a business, but it wasn't really lighting me up. It wasn't something that I was choosing. It was something I'd fallen into 10 years earlier and I was just fed up.
Once
I stopped drinking, I stopped blaming myself and made the changes, sold the business, changed, you know, started figuring out what it was I really wanted to do with my time.
If you'd like to explore writing your way in a supportive and non-judgmental community of like-minded writers, check out my Winter Writing Circle running November to December 2022. You'll find a link with all the info and the link to register in the show notes. If you like this episode, please share with someone you think would like it, and please do subscribe and leave a review so that we can help more writers.
I think it's such an important message. And I mean, you know, I'm so pleased that you've written your book now, which came out earlier this year, which is why I really wanted to have you on the show as well to talk about that. And yeah, the whole writing process. So why did you decide to write the book? How has your journey been?
I think I did want to be online. I'm more drawn to video than I would be to the written word. And it's just probably where my confidence lies. But I felt that, you know, it's a business card book. It's a message that you've sat with yourself and you mean it. You know, and I think it was something I actually was invited to be in a challenge. I took part in a challenge and the prize was to be part of a book, like collaboration, and I didn't win and I was so disappointed. I was devastated, and I remember I rang my mum and she said, write your own book. And until she said that, I didn't have permission.
Oh, so funny. Why did we wait for permission?
I don't know. It was like, if I had won the competition, then that was my path. Had I not, but I didn't win the competition, it was, and I didn't even know that block was there, if that makes sense.
Interesting, yeah.
So she planted that seed, and it just took such a long time for me to jump and say, take myself seriously, to convince myself that I would see it through. And oh, it was a really tough process. But now it's changed everything, because I have that there. I have I don't want to say the start of my funnel, but that's exactly what it is.
Yes.
People can take time to take it away for like 12 quid or something and read it. And if they're interested and if they get the concept, then they come forward. Yeah. And that's a different client that's coming forward than before.
They've taken that first step already, haven't they? They've raised their hand in that way by actually buying the book.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think the beginning of this process, I have a 5-stage process, and it's really stage 3 by the time people pick up the phone and they start talking to me. So the beginning part is getting it right in your own head, observing other people, questioning your decision-making around alcohol. Is it every time you're stressed? Is it, you know, so you're watching your own behavior. A lot of that is the process. It's not like, that's it, I'm stopping today. It takes a long time for you to figure this stuff out. And the book really helps women to do that.
What did you most enjoy about writing the book, would you say?
I suppose I enjoyed getting clear with my message. Like I said, the 5 stages, if I hadn't had that, I would have struggled with it just being one big container. But because I've broken it down into these stages, based on the stages I went through, of course, it's enabled me to actually walk myself through that process again, if that makes sense. Because I've journaled a lot throughout my own journey, and then I went back and I volunteered in a recovery center. I've done lots of other training and, you know, I've worked a lot on myself to give me the confidence to stand here and do this. And having gone that little bit extra really has just embedded the whole journey that I went on. So I suppose it's helping me by helping other people, if that makes sense. Right.
Yeah, and it's kind of clarified your kind of framework for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Completely. Yeah.
Because I have like a case study for each stage. So it's the acronym of SOBER, S for Susie, stuck like Susie. So she's my first pal. I call the five pals. Susie's stuck and she doesn't really know that alcohol is the problem. She blames everything but that. So that's where I was. And then you turn more like Ollie, who's observing, which I mentioned, you observe your own behavior. Hopefully you're influenced by me or my clients. And then you become bold like Bessie, and that's when you take action and you say, right, it's my turn now. And you start engaging in life, because sometimes you can stay home with a dry January mindset and close the curtains and just get through it. That's one level, but going out and actually socializing and owning this, that it's a choice that you're making. It's not because you have to, it's because you're choosing not to.
Yeah.
That can make people very prickly. If you spend a lot of time with Susies, they don't understand. But having those different, instead of saying, oh, you know, that person doesn't understand, I can now say, she's just Susie. She doesn't know. That's why she's upset. You're not drinking at a birthday party. She doesn't know what we know. And that's okay. Give her some compassion. And in time, hopefully she'll observe you and she'll be bold herself. If not, let that go. And then slowly become Riley, which is rebalanced, and you look back and no longer is it so much of a problem. No longer is it like what you lead with, that it's your identity, because a lot of the time that's what this is. It's an identity thing. If we think that we are the party person, it's hard to take that off.
Yeah, yeah. What did you find, what was most difficult about writing the book?
Sitting with myself. For the whole process, because I work a lot online. So you think of something, you post it, and you've got a few likes, you've got that encouragement, you've got someone clapping their hands, you're not on your own. Where the book, it was deep being on your own and spending the time, because I'm quite disorganized. I'll come up with a system and tomorrow it'll be a different system. So just actually going through it, which is so beneficial that I had somebody that I worked with on it. And it, mine is designed slightly different to just a book with a beginning, middle, and end. It's more of a kind of like a journal, because there's space in the book for people to write, which is why you couldn't find it on in Audible or Kindle, because it's actually a place for you to put your own entries in as well. But I think just having that deadline and having somebody to listen when I was frustrated and tears, because it's hard. It's really hard, especially at the end, to press the button and say, yes, I believe that this will help. Let everyone else read it.
Yeah, no, that's so hard. And I think that's going to be really helpful for people to just hear that, you know, it's okay for it to be hard. It's okay to want to get help. To need that. Okay, you don't need permission from your mum, let me just say that. But you know, just to have someone on your side. And you know, I know you did have a book coach as well, which wasn't me, somebody else that helped you through it.
To be honest, I think I might have needed a bit more hand-holding. So for me, it wasn't so much that it was a book coach, it was more, what do you want on page one, what do you want on page two?
Right. Okay.
And I think I imagined that I would get someone saying, oh, Claire, you've got this on page two. It would look much better on page five. It's none of that.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's
isn't it? And I mean, whatever kind of help you need, you can always find someone that will kind of give you that level. And I think it's important for people to kind of know what they need. You know, if you know, I know, right, I'm really disorganized and I want someone to hold my hand, give me accountability, guide me what goes where, or I'm pretty confident but I just need someone to, I don't know, edit it or something at the end. But kind of knowing that, and even knowing what help is available, I suppose
that's it. I think
what you don't know.
Definitely. And I think I jumped and said, like, let's just do it, book it. And I wanted to do it whilst I was motivated. I've always been like this through this journey, and I don't know if it's going back to my drinking brain, almost like I wouldn't have trusted myself to say, oh, let's think about it for a few weeks. Because the moment was there, I was like, right, let's book it. So I felt like I booked it maybe before I felt ready, which I think was the thing to do. Had I waited until I was ready, I might not have even been there yet.
Well, that can be useful as well. And, you know, even if you are kind of with your book and you're thinking, right, oh, I don't know if I'm going to finish, but if you kind of have an idea of when you might get that draft in, you know, start looking for an editor, book your editor in so that you've got that something there, kind of get a goal or a deadline, that kind of accountability, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to any of my listeners? Maybe they're at the beginning of their book journey or the messy middle. What would you say to them?
I think it's about owning all of it. Like, no one can really tell you, like, I don't know if it's permission. Was it the permission? It's permission or that it's right. How can it be right if it's yours? I think that was the bit. And it's realizing that you have to crack all those eggs. Like, it was messy, like messy in my mind, messy in my physical environment. I had got all my journals out. And I think just being okay with, like, getting it all out, then burning it all down. Like, that felt like it was necessary. I remember I sat and I did a whole timeline of my life. And it probably wasn't really necessary because the bits I picked out were tiny. But I felt I needed to do that for to get all of me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it wasn't just about the end goal of the book. It's who I am at the end of that. Because even if I got someone else to do all that for me, it's me who has to sit here and share it, isn't it?
Well, that's it, yeah. And I think, you know, quite often when people go through this process, there are tears, you know, there are because it's bloody hard. For a start, but it's also going back through that and taking those pieces and deciding what you're going to share and what you don't need to and all of that. It can always be,
And, you know, I always say you've got to crack all the eggs to make the omelette, and like it's going to get messy like that, and just owning every part of it. And you know, and letting go of that perfection. And even now when I'm saying this, allowing it to be over as well, because I feel, you know, so many times I'm going through my files, I'm looking, I'm thinking, I'm sitting there and everything's here. It's all in here.
Yeah.
I can let go now and just go, I remember the work that went into finding that bit out, you know?
And how beautiful to have something like that you can share with your clients.
I don't rely on that as much as what I probably should.
Yeah.
Like, until you've asked me to think it through, I think that is a benefit that maybe will come when I allow myself to relax, because I do feel the adrenaline is still there.
Yes.
It's still there, isn't it? Because the book's done, then it's, what about reviews? And then the reviews, and then you're selling more, and then the next month you want to sell more again.
Just relax and enjoy it for a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, something that I ask all my guests is, what book are you currently reading, or what would you recommend to listeners?
The book that I always share, but I have thought of another one as well. So The Female Brain, this one just really helped me on a level to understand myself first, and also my relationship with other women. But the most important part of it was the self-compassion that I understood from. And, you know, it's not like a gender thing. It's female brain. You can still have masculine parts to your brain, and masculine men can have female parts to their brain. So it's not like that. It's not like a woman's brain. It's actually really scientific.
Okay. Who's that by? I haven't come across that one.
She's called Luann Brizendine.
Okay.
Brizendine.
I'll look that up and pop it in the show notes.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it because it takes you right through, like, you know, puberty and all the way through different things. And then the other one that I wanted to share was Beneath the White Coat. Because of this subject, many people, obviously, it is important to go and speak to your GP. If you've been drinking a lot and you're going to stop drinking, it's important.
Right.
We'll have to, you know, for obvious reasons. But this just put a different spin on that, because this is written by the doctor who looks after the doctors. So obviously doctors aren't immune to this either. Like, they're under a lot of stress. And it shows really from that point of view that you know, I just found it this amazing as well. This is just so eye-opening that we go to a doctor and expect them, and we forget that they're actually a person as well with their own, you know, because of the profession that they're in, the perfectionists, right? And so they feel hard on themselves when they can't help.
Right. Yeah.
See, so it really got me looking at that. And I just thought that's important, because a lot of the time we say, you know, if you read everything and it says speak to your doctor, the queue would be really long before you do a diet, before you do anything, you've got to speak to your doctor. But I just thought that was really interesting to have another spin on it to see
And it's like, I think sometimes as coaches as well, you know, it's always, you want to have a coach who's also got a coach.
Absolutely, 100%. So that book was Beneath the White Coat by Claire Gerada. That was that one.
Okay. Oh, well, thank you so much. I mean, that was just such a generous and honest conversation there with everything about your journey and the writing. So I think listeners are going to get a lot out of that. So thank you for joining me, Claire.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, and before you go, where can listeners find you? Tell us about your Facebook group, your LinkedIn.
Yeah, the best place to find me, before you commit to joining my group or anything like that, you can find me on YouTube. So you could subscribe, Claire the Soberholic on YouTube, or I have a Facebook page that leads into my group. So if you want more accountability, more support, and be around other people who are also on this journey, then head there. Claire the Soberholic on Facebook.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you liked it and you can think of someone else that would like it, please do share it. And I'd love it if you could rate and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Let me know if there's anything you'd like me to talk about on the show, if you know anyone you think I should interview, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Speak to you next week, and until then, happy writing.